This is the Rogue Startups Podcast, Episode 1.
Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where startup founders just like you share stories about how they've built and grown their own software businesses. We hope this not only educates you, but inspires and entertains as well. Okay, enough of the fluff. On to our host, Craig Hewitt.
All right, guys, today we have Justin McGill on the podcast. Justin is from Phoenix, Arizona, and is part of the Micropreneur Academy, and we are going to talk to Justin all about how he got started in the startup space and in tech, and he has a particularly neat interest or background in marketing. We're going to delve into that a lot, I think, today. So, Justin, how you doing?
Great. Thanks a lot for having me, Craig. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. No problem. So I think it's nice to give people some background, kind of how you got started and where you came from to arrive where you are today. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I kind of got started, I guess, back in technology, back in high school. I kind of downloaded a cracked version of Photoshop and Dreamweaver and built some really crappy table-based websites. But then ultimately, about in 2008, beginning of 2008, I had started a digital marketing agency and certainly offered some websites and whatnot through WordPress. But the primary focus was marketing. And I guess through that, basically after a couple of years, the agency started to grow and my team started to grow. And I needed a solution to manage our operations. And, I looked at different project management software, but when you're working on marketing campaigns, it's just a little different. It's not a one-off project. You've got things that are happening on an ongoing basis. And so I built out a system, which is now known as Workidoo, but, internally we used it for a couple of years, and then I just decided to kind of branch that out and, make it a software as a service platform.
Neat. So I think that's, from what I hear and understand, that's pretty unique to jump straight into SaaS as a first entry into software products. A lot of guys advocate kind of getting started small. Talked in the prologue about the stair-step approach that Rob Walling advocates. Do you think, has it been tough getting straight into SaaS, or do you think you missed anything along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's when I first started it, I'm looking at it like, there's hundreds of thousands of digital marketers and the market opportunity is huge, and you get an X percentage of that, right? And it just doesn't quite work that way.
Sure.
And so it's been quite the learning experience for sure, but I ended up having to rebuild the system that I had built internally, which was on Ruby on Rails, and I had to rebuild it from the ground up because it was it didn't allow users to see the same thing simultaneously. So I needed real time updating, and ultimately had to kind of switch over to JavaScript to accomplish that,
okay.
Which required obviously a whole new rebuild, and it took quite a while. I mean, we're still working on it, obviously, but. I was able to get it to a point where it launched a couple of months ago, but man, I mean, you're talking 10 months of development, and it's been quite a journey.
Not a cheap endeavor, is it?
Not at all. I'm into it for about 40,000 now, because I'm not the developer. So even though I kind of had some very basic, HTML based experience, I mean, beyond that, there was just no hope for me to put something together like this. So I've worked with a few different developers and when it comes to JavaScript, obviously that can be pretty expensive. So it hasn't been cheap. That's for sure. It's been pretty pricey.
Yeah. There's a lot in that I want to dig into. One of them is, I think that we are at a really interesting point in history, not to be too dramatic, but in history right now, we have access to relatively cheap and easy to access labor and talent that can develop these products for us. So people probably like you and I, who don't have a lot of technical background in programming and coding and software development, and even getting into like architecture. You know, building out a product like Workadoo is complex, and much less refactoring it all the way from Rails to, I'm guessing, like Node.js that you're into now. It is a huge deal that people like us wouldn't have had the opportunity to get into at all, even 5 years ago, probably. So I think, I hope that we get a chance to dig into a little bit of how you went about finding the people that are developing the product for you, and kind of what'd you learn along the way? Because I think as we go through the podcast a little bit looking forward, I hope to see a lot of this, and I think we will, even guys with technical backgrounds are choosing to outsource development a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it makes so much sense, right? Because you want to really focus on what you're good at, and I understand marketing, having, the digital marketing agency background. But yeah, you're right. I mean, so it's built on Node.js on the back end and AngularJS on the front end. And, those guys aren't as prevalent as, say, like a PHP developer. But one thing that I did learn through my agency experience is how to maximize something like Odesk. And really, that's how I found my developers. But I've used four different developers up to this point because the project has been going on for so long. And then ultimately, I'm working with freelancers. So, another thing that I might do different if I were to launch another SaaS product would be to look for a technical co-founder that could handle the coding. A, I'd save a lot of money, and B, a lot of headaches trying to interview and replace developers as they move on to other projects. But that's been, really the biggest hurdle in this whole thing is exactly that. Just finding the, consistent developer that's going to be able to see things through and not have to, replace them on a regular basis. And like I said, I mean, that's primarily because they are freelancers and they've got other responsibilities. They may take a project and have that budgeted for, 2 months or 3 months, and then as it gets into that, that ninth week or so, they're starting to look for their next project, right? Because they're kind of going project to project. So, it's unfortunate, because obviously you kind of want to keep them around for a while, but sometimes it just doesn't work out that way.
It's a blessing and a curse. Probably it's a blessing that you have access to so many people, and a curse that the structure of it, at least right now for a lot of us, is, like you said, that they're freelancers and they're not beholden to you in any formal long-term way, right? So if they have something better that comes along, can't really blame them necessarily for moving on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, none of the relationships that I've had have ended poorly by any means. I certainly understand. But at the same time, it can certainly be frustrating because, they are just contracted for that particular project. They don't have any stake in the game per se. Even when it's been offered, it hasn't necessarily worked out. And so it's just, I guess just one of those things. It's definitely a challenge without having a technical co-founder.
So it sounds like finding people probably isn't as hard as managing them and keeping them kind of on track and on pace as you go along through the development of or refactoring of your product. Any sort of things you've learned or lessons along the way with that?
Yeah, I mean, so I've had to, I've actually, using resources like the Micropreneur Academy, I've come up with, a process, an interview, list of interview questions. And for Workadoo in particular, it's built on Linux, and so I like to do a screen share and just see and make sure that they're actually comfortable within that environment, and kind of watch them, do maybe a little test project, as long as they're obviously passing the interview questions, and that's filtered out developers pretty well.
Sure.
And from there, I mean, I've literally hired. I've hired someone from Canada at $50 an hour. I've hired someone from India at $30 an hour. And I've hired someone here locally at $90 an hour. And that person's actually taking a full-time position on January 5th. And so
congratulations.
Yeah, well, no, not with me.
Oh no.
Yeah, exactly. So luckily I've got another developer that's kind of been building up and working alongside him for a little bit. And so I feel comfortable about where things are at, but yeah, it's been a journey and it still continues.
Yeah, I mean, I'll speak for my experience in the corporate world. Turnover in personnel is just a killer. I mean, the cost of it in a big company is huge, but the lack of productivity, from my perspective, at least in a company, I can imagine it's just as big or bigger for you in a small business is just killer. I mean, you have the downtime of teaching someone how to do something again after you just taught, you know, their predecessor. It's got to be tough.
It is, and if you don't have that person lined up immediately, I mean, you're talking about everything within your app just being at a complete standstill.
Yep. You know,
and that's, extremely stressful because you might have bug reports coming in. Well, not might, if you're launched or even in beta, I mean, you have bug reports coming in, you've got feature requests coming in, and yet, you know, you have no way to get those things resolved. So it's very, very critical that you always have a backup plan in place. And that is the one thing I've been able to have up to this point is always having that next developer in queue should I need them.
Sure. So you kind of scratched your own itch with your product. Any sort of thoughts around how we talked about it a little bit before we started the recording, but any thoughts around kind of the process of identifying market need? Did you have to pivot any when you went from this is an internally developed product to releasing it for public and, you know, consumption? Is there anything you learned around that where you took it from an internal app to releasing it to the public?
Yeah, I mean, I came to this a little late to the party, I think. I mean, what I should have done, not necessarily the product. The product is very unique. There isn't another platform out there that manages monthly campaigns. But what I should have done is probably talked with the potential customers beforehand. I was solely going at it from the standpoint of I knew what we needed at my agency, and this is how I needed it, how I wanted it, and built it without talking to anybody about it. And so having gone through the beta process and then launching as of a couple of months ago, there's certainly some things that I definitely would have done different. And so what I've learned from that process is always talk to your potential customers before you start building it, because you're going to learn a lot about, you know, how different customers would use your application. And ultimately that's going to be kind of how the product is developed. So, that's definitely something I would do a little different.
Yeah. I tell you, I mean, so I think I said before, I have a master's in from podcasting over the last couple of years, but that's the one constant that I hear from all the software startup type podcasts is just go talk to your customers, your potential customers, and then build the app that they want, not necessarily the thing that you want to build, because a lot of us technical minded people want to just go in the basement and code away or figure out a way to make a better widget, and there might just not be a whole lot of people to buy it. And it sounds like you may have gotten a little fortunate to have the thing that you needed also be something that a lot of other people need. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, I got a little lucky. I mean, I had a digital marketing agency, right? And this is what powered our whole company. So I wasn't just coming at this from, you know, trying to research a niche and then, you know, narrow it down from there, trying to solve the problem. I knew going in what the problem was, but what has been interesting to me is just kind of how different agencies operate currently. You know, there really isn't a standard. And so, you know, kind of taking the feedback and pulling it all together, you know, I could have definitely shaved some development time and launched this a little earlier and then had things I think that were more relevant to maybe a wider range of agencies at launch versus kind of just basically, you know, I launched with exactly what I needed. So I would have definitely done that different. And I hear you for sure. I mean, these different podcasts that that I listen to say the same thing. But I just came across podcasting over the course of the summer, and I started this product in January. And so, you know, I was kind of coming at it a little blind, but it's definitely a great learning experience.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think just jumping in with both feet is the only way to go. I mean, I think we can all sit around and pontificate about how to do things and what the best way would be. And if you don't just get in and screw up a little bit and make some mistakes, you're not going to learn. You're definitely not going to ever move forward, I don't think. It's the curse of preparation and paralysis by analysis is a real thing. I mean, I admittedly have lived it in the past, and it's nice to see, you know, people getting up and moving forward kind of without knowing what they're doing even. It's kind of nice to see.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to have the product sheltered for as long as I did without even having a beta until I think it was around August. That was definitely a mistake. I mean, to a point where I actually launched a productized service within 24 hours just a couple of weeks ago. And just the difference is just amazing. I mean, with one, it was all kind of sheltered and no one really knew about it. And then with the productized service, it was all built out in the open. And so, you know, I mean, literally from concept to launch, I blogged the whole journey. And so it was like, you know, the extreme end of what I learned, I think.
Sure, sure. Yep, I had a similar experience earlier this year with the sort of an outsourcing selection agency. And the same thing, I built it in a week, kind of the Dan Norris 7-day startup style. And turned out that a couple things. One, it wasn't really my passion, so I didn't want to go at it full steam. The other thing is that I didn't really have a lot of experience at it, so I didn't know how efficient I could be at it. So I kind of tabled it for now. It's still out there, and I may dig it up later after I get some knowledge, but it's not the thing for the table right now. But I wanted to get into, as much as you're comfortable, can you give us a feel for what the scope of Workadoo is like now? You said you have a couple developers working for you. Anything about revenue? I know it's a SaaS product, so you have recurring revenue. Can you give us a feel for kind of how big it is and where you see it going in the near term?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I mean, when I started this, I had some pretty grandiose visions and saw $1 million a year, you know, revenue potential. And who knows? I mean, it may still get there. I feel like ultimately it's probably going to be low to mid six figures as a cap on the potential. Right now, it's around $600 to $650 a month in revenue. And I really haven't, ironically enough, haven't done a whole lot on the marketing side, just because I know I've gotten some initial feedback, and I know there's been some minor quirks that we're ironing out. But as of I think actually next week, I've got a post going live on HubSpot and doing another one on Buffer, and so I'm starting to get into the guest posting and start the whole, you know, content marketing and really just the full marketing, I guess, onslaught, if you will. And so I'm hoping to get it to, you know, around $8,000 a month in revenue by the end of the year, and by June, you know, around $4,000 a month in revenue. So that's kind of the goal, if you will.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I think it's interesting that when we start out, we have these ideas for how big something it can be. And it sounds like you're just a few months into it and already have a really good idea for what your real potential probably is. I think it probably means you understand your business pretty well.
Yeah, I had to definitely scale back some expectations, that's for sure, from where they were. But I still think there's a lot of potential, and I'm excited to see it through.
So one thing I think that's interesting is to think about, you know, we have, I think you and I are about the same age, I'm mid-30s, and I think about how many big shots I have in life, right? I have so many times up to the plate to really give something a good shot, you know, this project or that project. Where do you think Workadoo stands in the realm of these big at-bats or these big attempts you have at making a real, I don't want to say a career, but a real product that you'll work on for more than a couple of years?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I'm almost a serial entrepreneur, I think, at this point. I've got a lot of ideas. I've got an Evernote filled with them, and I think I'm going to probably take the Rob Walling approach and look for something that once I get work to do and stabilized and where I want it, and I'm going to kind of look for somebody to manage that or even potentially sell it and move on to something that I feel that I can 10x from where Workadoo's at.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean that's kind of the plan. It could be could be 2-3 years from now, but I'm gonna take a similar approach to as Rob Walling does.
Gotcha. That's pretty smart. I think a lot of us would do very well if we did the same thing that those guys do. They're rock stars for sure. Yeah. So related to that, have you ever bought an internet property, a website, or an app?
You know, I actually came pretty close to it a couple of times. One from a fellow Micropreneur Academy member, and we had a tentative agreement. But he ended up getting a better offer from another company, and he moved forward with that. The other site that I had used was Flippa, and there was a QA management tool called Overlook, uh-huh. Overlook.io that was available that I was strongly considering. One of the challenges with Workadoo that I've come to experience is in the quality assurance and testing. It's not something I really want to spend my time doing. And so I've been looking kind of for some outsourced help for sure, but more so just learning the process to better manage it. And just so happened that this software kind of accomplished that. But I talked with a couple of developers and a couple of people in my network that were kind of the target market for it, and they weren't necessarily seeing as much value in it as I was. And so I ended up holding off and not moving forward with it. But it is definitely something I would strongly consider as my next SaaS app. If I were to start it all over again, I would definitely have done that first, because like I said, I mean, I'm in for over 40 grand for Workadoo at this point, and up to this point, it's generating $600 a month in revenue, right? So yeah. I would definitely take in a different path for my first, venture into SaaS, and I would have gone that route.
So it's interesting. I think that my first entry into a real software product will be something I purchase. I have, like I said, we mentioned before, I have a technical background, but not necessarily in computer science or coding. And I think that I know marketing, I know sales, I could definitely go out and sell something and hope to bootstrap up some cash over here the next couple of months to be able to shell out, say 10 grand for a smallish kind of product that then, like you said, you can really grow. The next episode of the podcast, we hope to have Dave Rodenbaugh on. So he's from the Academy as well, and he is he's got a lot of experience with buying and selling websites on Flippa and digital properties, if you will. So it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say. He actually has a pretty big book I'm working on right now that he wrote a few years ago just on Flippa. So he's kind of the guy, I think, for Flippa. It'll be pretty interesting to hear what he has to say about it.
Well, I look forward to that, because, like I said, I would have definitely gone that route. And really, I mean, some of these apps, I mean, they're so much cheaper than for sale on Flippa than if you were to go and build it out separately. I'm definitely finding that out myself. But, I mean, that is definitely the way to go. If you're not a developer, I would highly implore you go that direction.
Yep. I think that there's a time factor to it as well. It's not just can you build it for the same amount that you could buy it for, but it's already there, it's matured, it has all this SEO juice that goes along with an older, seasoned, high-quality domain and things like that. I think there's a lot of intangibles to it that I think a lot of people realize that too. There's not a lot of $10,000 to $20,000 apps and websites out there. I think there's a big shortage of them because people probably like us say, hey, instead of going out there and beating my head against the the door for a year, I could just go spend, you know, maybe twice as much money and start making some back right away.
Right.
Yep. No doubt about that. Interesting. Interesting. So here's a couple interesting, just quick questions. What would your advice be to someone who is considering learning to code?
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually just did a 1 month Rails, trying to learn Ruby on Rails. So I did that course and thought that was pretty excellent. I like the screencasts. Something else I would do would be to bookmark Stack Overflow. They've got some pretty much any question you've had, they've already had asked, and they've got a list of answers. And I actually just came across, literally today, just came across a post on Medium from Mackenzie Child, and he actually just basically recorded himself learning Ruby on Rails over the course of like 12 weeks and built different apps within those 12 weeks. And I can send that to you, and maybe you can link it up in the show notes or something.
Sure. But
those screencasts look pretty promising as well. So I'm actually going to dive into that. Not necessarily to, my goal isn't necessarily to be able to code my own products, because I do feel that my time is better spent on the marketing side of things, but it would be nice, to kind of play around and if you had quick fixes that you needed to perform, you could do it yourself. So, I certainly want to, kind of invest some time into learning it. But yeah, that would probably be where I start.
Yep. I think that the value for people like us probably in learning to code is to get an MVP out the door really quickly. You talked about your 24-hour startup thing. I think, between that and the 7-day startup type model, you could get something out the door, use WordPress, use Rails, use Node, all these things that are kind of boxed together in a framework, get something out the door, test it with real people and real money, as opposed to finding a developer, paying a bunch of money, all these kind of things. Get something just crappy out the door and see how it works.
Completely agree. There's a guy, Matt Kramer. He's got his own podcast as well that I follow, and he kind of has a three-step process where he tries to find it, and if he can't find it, he'll try to buy it, and then if he can't buy it, he'll try to code it himself. And one thing that I would add to that would be to look for integrations for certain types of functionality that you're looking to incorporate into your app, because it's going to save you a load of time compared to trying to build everything out from scratch.
Yep, for sure. So we talked about Evernote a little bit before. If there's one app or service you couldn't live without, what would it be?
Yeah, I mean, I guess aside from Gmail, right? I spend, there's an app that I just purchased called Rescue Time.
Okay, sure, heard of it.
I came across it from an AppSumo deal and tried it out, and it is amazing. Because what it does is it installs on your machine, but basically just tracks all of your apps that you have running, all of the tabs that you have open, and just documents where you're spending your time. And it's pretty amazing, how much time can get away from you when you're doing things that aren't necessarily that productive. And so for me, I'm big on efficiency and being productive, and that app's really served me very well.
That's neat. Yeah, I've definitely heard of it. A lot of guys advocate using it. I don't work from home every day, so the time I have at home on the computer is pretty focused. The kids go to bed at 7:30 or 8. I have 2 hours before we go to bed, so it's not like I have a lot of time to dilly dally. I need it for my iPhone, because there's a lot of wasted time on my iPhone during the day. So that brings up something I wanted to touch on earlier, and it's circling back a little bit, but I assume you work from home then?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I started off working from home when I was building my agency, and then we got an office about a year into it, and then as of January 1st of this year, I ended up going fully remote. Didn't renew our lease and basically just had everyone working from home. And I wanted to try it out. I just felt I was much more productive working at home. I wasn't going to have the questions and the interruptions that I would normally get within the office environment. Mm-hmm. So everyone's been working from home and, you know, just using the hell out of Skype and join me for, you know, conferences and whatnot. But it's worked out really well. I mean, you lose some camaraderie, but overall it's been very effective. And then obviously for me, it allowed me to kind of transition away from my agency over the course of the summer, and it made that transition much easier to do. So it's really worked out well. Now I've got a baby here due June 25th. So, you know, I may be looking at setting up an office somewhere to get some work done, but
work hard now because you won't get that much done then, right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I'm down the hall from our 2 and 4 year old right now, and hoping I don't wake them up. But it's little kids in the house is tough. I think it would be very challenging to work from home just because I've never done it. I'm sure if that's all you've ever known, it's probably just a learning process like anything else, and setting boundaries and things like that. But I that's one of those kind of soft things in consideration with startups and remote work that maybe some people don't think about, but it surely is something that could screw up your life pretty quick if when you're home you're not happy because you can't get your work done, and then you stop working and you're still not happy because you have the stress of work hanging over you in the same place you've been all day. I can imagine there's a lot to it emotionally.
Right, and then it's, you know, and then where do you go?
Right. Yep, for sure. That's funny. So I think it sounds like you've been very successful with almost everything you've done in your entrepreneurial journey so far. What do you think is your biggest regret or lesson you've learned?
Yeah, I think really it comes back to Workadoo and that next step that I took. I guess back at January 1st, we went remote, and it was around that time we started development on Workadoo. And, you know, just looking back, I mean, like I said, I would have changed a lot of things about how I got started with that. I think, you know, I've probably invested a little too much into Workadoo up to this point compared to where it's at. And so I would have look for a different opportunity there. Another regret would be not firing fast enough with my agency, and, you know, keeping people on when it was probably obvious that it wasn't going to work out. And so kind of learning to fire fast, as they say. I would have liked to have had that ability a little sooner than I did.
Sure. Well, don't beat yourself up too much on Workadoo. It sounds like you really just got it out in the wild a couple of months ago. I think that's very respectable for where you are for just a few months of real marketing. It sounds like you got big plans already in the works and in the pipeline for the first part of the year. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm certainly excited about where it can go. I just wish I probably could have got there a little sooner had I done things a little different. But hey, you live and learn, right?
Yep, for sure. One thing I think is tough, and this is a little bit of me speaking personally as a fledgling founder and internet entrepreneur, maybe is getting the first dollar. You know, what does it take to go and make $1 online? Is a big question I think a lot of people ask. It's a beginner question kind of, but I think there's a lot of fundamentals to it too. What do you think is the biggest obstacle people face from just playing around with WordPress and quote blogging and thinking they're going to be the next Pat Flynn or something to really starting to make progress? What do you think is the big hurdle people have to get over?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest challenges is making your first dollar. I know for me, starting out with my agency, it was rough going. I mean, at one point, I mean, I literally had -$6 in my bank account and had to get scrappy. I didn't like doing cold calls. And so I had to find ways to generate leads and generate sales. And I'm writing a book on exactly how I did that. But a couple of the ways that I did that was for, I guess when I started, I manually scraped Craigslist. I mean, literally spent 6 hours a day going through every Craigslist posting, looking for job postings that companies were looking for SEO people.
That's hustling.
Yeah, I mean, it was rough. I mean, literally spent a good 2-3 weeks doing that, 6 hours a day, just trying to, you know, get my foot in the door for a meeting. And ultimately, that led to my very first deal, which paid almost $2,000 a month. And you know, it just really helped kind of catapult things. Another thing that I did was looked for companies that weren't ranking well and did all the research, tried to find their contact information. And I've actually kind of turned this into a productized service, but basically I would look for certain types of businesses in certain verticals and research their domain to try and find contact information. It could be on their website. It could be on, you know, who is, whatever I had to do, right, to get the contact information, and then prepared cold email sequences. And yep, that includes the follow-ups. You know, so many people reach out once and then that's it. But the key is in the follow-up. And so, you know, I would just set reminders to automatically, you know, to remind myself to follow up with you know, people I felt were good potential customers. And ultimately it allowed me to build a 7-figure marketing agency. So, yeah, that's how I went about it.
Man, that's awesome to hear a really scrappy, and don't take that the wrong way, it's a really scrappy story to hear going from 0 to 7 figures just on hard work. And I think, I mean, I asked the question because I think I know the answer, and a little, like I said, it's a little bit of introspectiveness on my part is just doing the hard work. You know, blogging, and I made that example earlier, is not hard work. It's easy. You put something up on WordPress and no one's going to come read it. If you want to make money, you have to go find people who want to spend money on something and get them to pay you for it. And I think that's the tough thing that a lot of people are uncomfortable with. It's just not easy to ask someone for money. I mean, I'm in sales, so it, maybe it's a little bit easier for me because I do it in one form or fashion every day, but it's still hard. I think that asking people for money to pay for something that is perfectly worth what you're charging, it is still hard. But you have the increased sort of emotional complexity of you built this thing yourself, or this is your own service, and you have to justify that in your mind and what that value is. I think that's probably where people get held up from even getting off the ground, is justifying to themselves that what they've done is worth $20 and they should go ask everyone they know for $20 for their thing. And if everyone can get their mind around that, I think everyone would get off the ground in no time.
Yeah. I mean, I really feel like it's that, but it's also consistency, right? It's blogging's easy, but blogging every single week for a year, not as easy.
Sure.
Right. The Craigslist thing that I was telling you, you know, I spent 2-3 weeks every day, 6 hours a day. Well, now there's the ability to use, you know, RSS feeds and everything else and make it a lot easier. But yet at the same time, I did that because I had to, and I did it for 3 weeks straight every single day. Eventually kind of, you know, worked in some other methods like I was telling you. So it's all about consistency.
Yep. Yep. That's definitely true. I mean, I think you don't get them the first time, you don't get them the second time, you don't get them the third time. Very often you get them the 10th time you call someone. And I mean, that's something I've seen in a lot of different places in life. You know, my wife is one of them. So that's funny. You got to ask a lot of times.
Yes. No question. I've been there myself.
That's funny. So entrepreneurs, I think, often look forward. They look at where they are and they look forward a lot. As a learning lesson, if you could go back, say, 2 years and do it all over again, just as a learning lesson for yourself, what would you do differently? Sounds like from where you started out being pretty successful in the agency, but what would you do differently to give yourself a different trajectory going forward?
Yeah, I would have. Well, for one, honestly, I would have gotten into podcasting years ago. It's been such a great learning experience. So there's that for sure. I would have probably gone down the path that I took this summer, which was to kind of separate myself from the agency and pursue other endeavors. I wasn't as interested in it anymore. I was more so managing people and whatnot. I wasn't really enjoying what I was doing, and so it had been that way for honestly a couple of years. And so I would probably go back and do what I did this summer and start that process 2 years ago.
Sure. That's a good answer. I think I can see the truth in that. I see that getting stuck in something you're not super passionate about or don't see a lot of potential in the long run. Yeah. And just like you said, kind of with firing earlier, kind of fire yourself from that job and move on to something that you love and you see has the big potential in the future. Yeah,
that's exactly it. Yeah.
Yep. That's interesting. So can you tell us a little bit about the book? I just hit publish on my first Kindle self-published book yesterday, and I already have almost 100 downloads. It's been a real neat experience. It's only about a 50-page book, but it's the avenue I'm planning on taking to build up my bankroll to purchase websites and apps in the future. You had mentioned that you're writing a book about how you built up your agency. Can you tell us a little bit about the book and the process of writing and what you think about being an author so far?
Yeah, interestingly enough, I mean, going back to eighth grade, I had actually written a 80-page short story as a fantasy novel. And I've always actually been interested in writing and to kind of parlay that interest with business is the perfect combination, I think. And so the book is called Self-Made Marketer. It's at selfmademarketer.com. And I'm about 30,000 words in. It's probably going to end up around 40,000, I would guess, somewhere around there. But basically, it's just going to kind of walk you through how to build a digital marketing agency for people that are interested in that, and kind of show you how to go from $0 or I guess even in my case, -$6.
That's right.
You know, to seven figures and everything, you know, that I did to accomplish that and the different lead generation strategies I incorporated. It's not necessarily going to be a tactics based book. There's several like how to do SEO. But it's going to show you kind of how to remove yourself from doing the SEO. And, you know, hiring the right people and having the right team and so forth.
Neat. I assume you're going to self-publish through Kindle?
Yeah, that's the plan. I'm going back and forth on kind of, you know, where I want it to be price point wise and whatnot. But I'm thinking kind of a lower price and the hopes of, you know, helping as many people as I can with it.
Gotcha. I'll give you a good resource. And he's been on a couple of the podcasts you probably listened to. Steve Scott is a guy who's just killing it, making, I think, like $40,000 a month writing pretty small Kindle ebooks. But he has a really pretty authoritative website on the topic of publishing for Kindle. And he helped me so much get my book out the door. And it's not hugely successful yet because it's still free, but he walked through the strategy for that. You basically put it out for free for a couple of days, put it in at 99 cents for a couple of days, and it's all a bit of SEO work really within Amazon, is to get both reviews and downloads, and both those boost your ranking. So as you get closer to publishing the book, check out Steve Scott. I think the website is stevescottsite.com, and a ton of resources there. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. I'll definitely be checking that out.
Yep. That's neat. Well, Justin, we're about 45 minutes into it. So I think unless you have any other questions that you wanted me to ask you, we'll call it a day.
That's good for me.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, tell the folks where they can, you know, find out more about you, get in touch with you if they'd like to ask you some questions. I'm sure you'll be hanging out in the show notes for this episode, which will be at roguestartups.com/episode1. So you guys can go there to check out the show notes. We'll have all the resources that we've mentioned here and some information about Justin. But where can people find more about you?
Absolutely. You can email me at justin@selfmademarketer.com or find me on Twitter. It's JUS10McGill, McGill. Justin McGill.
Very, very clever. I like it. All right, Justin, thanks so much for hopping on the podcast. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Craig. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today on the Rogue Startups Podcast, Episode 1 with Justin McGill. Head on over to the show notes at roguestartups.com/episode1. There you can see links to the resources we mentioned and leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you.